Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Erin. How are you? It's good to see you again. You're looking good. You've been working out.
The lighting in here is amazing.
Oh, it is.
Can't even see the bags under my eyes. Thank God for radio.
Yeah, face for radio. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape Machinery is pretty much everything John Deere. If you need a tractor or implements or service or parts, give them a call, 226-9226. They're located up in Shasta Lake City at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. Or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. And go in and see them right now. They have a 25% off special on a lot of products. I even saw a couple generators in there that are 25% off.
Ooh.
They got some water pumps. Go down there and check it out.
If you don't have a generator, this would be the time to do it.
Yep.
Before you get that.
Save some dough.
Before you get that special note from PG&E that your house is going to get hotter and hotter and hotter.
We're going to thaw your turkey.
And so then your Thanksgiving turkey will be thawed early this year.
That's right.
Oh, God. Yeah. I was up through the fire yesterday, and there's nowhere you can go in Northern California to get out of the smoke.
Nope. It's
I guess you could go straight up.
Slightly
overcast.
If
you had an airplane, you could do it. But
yeah.
Yeah. So we won't get into all that nonsense because that's a whole different set of problems. So today we're going to add another chapter in the marijuana saga, and it just we're going to do a bunch on this because honestly it's got to be done. This is they passed all these, and we have states across the country. I'm sure we have people in other countries who think, well, gee, if we just legalized it, everything would be so much better. We'd be pulling in tax revenue. It's like, no. Because, you know, it's funny. Criminal cartels have no intention of starting legal businesses. They didn't become criminal cartels because they couldn't figure out how to do it. Their product is always going to be cheaper, more available, and they already have their entire web of black market set up here in Northern California. We've got people from all over the place. We've got the Hmong. We've got the Chinese cartels. I guess there's Bulgarians involved. We've got Russians. You name it, they're all involved in growing dope. A bunch of them come out of Minnesota. So just before we link this to the border crisis, because it really does not directly link this time, I'm sure there's players. But these people have been here for a long time, and they are colonizing quickly. They come into your area, they buy up a dead subdivision out in a rural area that the land is cheap, and then, boom, they fall on you like a house. So I just did a thing at the Board of Supervisors in Shasta County on Thursday for them because these folks are coming out of the county to the north of us, and they came from a county to the east of us. So if you think it won't happen in your area, honestly, things to look for. When you start noticing that your farm supply store, you know, your tractor supply or whoever it is that sells soil and that kind of thing, when sales start to skyrocket, they're moving in. When your landscape materials guys, you know, that sell, maybe they have water tanks, maybe they've got pipes. I don't know what they sell, but I mean, I do, but I don't know if they sell those things specifically. But when you see stuff like that, lots of plastic. Their greenhouses are all with plastic, clear plastic and black plastic. And then the big spines that they put in, lots of plywood, lots of lumber. And they don't build houses. They don't build homes. They don't live in your neighborhood. The kids don't go to your school. You just have way too many people on the land, lots of chemicals, and it's a big, big disaster in the making. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us and click on the pot tab, made it really easy, didn't give it some fancy name like marijuana, just called it pot right there on the top. I keep loading in pictures. Those are all pictures I've taken. A few of them I got from other people, but they're from roughly the same place, and you can get an idea. The first three slides show 2018, 2020, and 2021. And when you look at from year to year to year, and you look at the stop those pictures and really look at them, zoom in on them, those are not homes. Those are all dope greenhouses that they have put in there. So people are one of the things that they're spraying on it. We found out one of the crazy chemicals that had 9,000 letters was, adhesive, spray adhesive. So it would capture more pollen. So that doesn't have like a half-life. It doesn't just dissolve, go away, blow away. It doesn't come off the product. It gets processed in. So if you're smoking it, eating it, or whatever, and you think this is some natural thing.
No, it's just for flavor.
I mean, you're absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You might as well just go out and drink antifreeze from your own garage. It's probably cleaner. And, you know, you'll at least know what complications you're going to have. It's,
well, that's one of the beauties of buying it on the black market.
But you don't know if it came from the black market. You don't know where it came from.
Yeah, that's true.
The stores are all organic. Yeah, okay. I totally believe that. So anyway, if you know people that are, you know, if you know people that are part of this or they're thinking, like, it always blows my mind, hey, we're just going to sell some water to the dope growers. I mean, I know a water seller up there made $13 million cash last year.
Whoa.
Not that it isn't lucrative, but the thing is, you can't just be a little bit in business with a drug cartel. I mean, we've all seen the movies. How do you get out? You know, they know you've got $13 million cash that you can't report, so what are you going to do when they come and steal it or, you know, kill your family?
Or you want to stop selling water.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
It's really taking over our rural lands, and if you don't live in a rural area where this is taking place, contact somebody who does. Because if you care about the environment, so maybe you love to smoke pot, but you're a big environmentalist. Yeah, well, good luck. These are all Superfund sites. It's a nasty, nasty mess. There's no bathrooms out there. They might put some porta potties, but nobody runs a septic system. They have no running water. It's a gnarly scene. Really, really nasty. And not something to be trifled with. The state, of course, is doing a terrible job. And their claim is, well, if everyone would legalize in their county the commercial production, then we would help you. You know, the counties that have done that, they're getting zero help. The illegal thing, nobody wants to touch it because, well, this was supposed to be the next great tax boon. Yes, we're going to get all these tax revenues from it. We're going to legalize it. The crime will all go away. Well, that's exactly the opposite. All it's done is move it all to private property. This is not happening on forest property, you know, on our public lands. This is in your neighborhood. This is in a subdivision in a far-flung rural area. It's all being done on private property, which makes it incredibly difficult to enforce, and it's overwhelming law enforcement. So,
well, just the sheer scale of it. I mean, people don't realize.
Oh my God!
The amount of manpower.
I mean,
it's
4,000 to 5,000 greenhouses, and you're looking at upwards of 6,000
to 8,000
people.
These aren't your backyard greenhouses. These are what, 80 by 120 or something.
Yeah, 30 by 100. A lot of them. I mean, some of them are different, but the ones up there are like 30 by 100.
Yeah.
So on 622 acres, they had 500 greenhouses. Not one home, not one bathroom, not one, you know, freshwater spigot.
How many people are tending those?
Thousands, 6,000 to 8,000 of them.
Wow.
Bunches of them are being human trafficked. Lots of them are held, basically. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, but not human trafficked. Like they got snatched off the street. They're indentured servants.
Mm-hmm.
So they're held there like slaves. They're not allowed to leave. You have sex trafficking. You have loads of crime that comes to the town near you. But like the closest large town has 7,500 people, and their tractor supply company has been the largest grossing store in the entire United States in a town of 7,500
in Yreka.
Yeah, because it's near, because it's been the source for a lot of the dope growers' materials. That's all been cut off. So there's a big fight up there, and obviously it's got everything to do with racism.
No, sure.
Because organized crime is perfectly fine.
And what's the impact on the wildlife and that sort of thing up there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there any?
No.
Oh, yeah. There's no wildlife. I did see a jackrabbit once. He was like the fastest jackrabbit in the world.
He was leaning.
He looked
mean.
Wild-eyed and hysterical. He was like the last guy left, and he knew it. He was running... running like a wild man.
But Wile E. Coyote didn't even make it.
No. And the thing is, I mean, the dogs are being killed the fire barely touched it. But when the fire went through, you had dogs chained to the greenhouses that were all burned alive. It's a bad scene. It's just not something you want in and or near your community. Because there are people who don't live anywhere near it who are all being impacted by it. You've got really increased vehicle traffic. You have people who don't care about your community. They really don't. They came there to make millions and leave.
Mm-hmm.
So on the heels of that really happy update, that's the product side of it. So our guest today, Dr. Philip Drumm, is talking about the Impaired Driving Task Force that apparently is still, I don't know, in the making or whatever, idiots, in California. So this is also something that will come to a state near you. If you're a state that hasn't legalized marijuana and you think, well, if we do that, it's working out good for the other guys. No, it's not working out good for the other guys. Absolutely not working out good for the other guys. Yeah, you have a lot more people using pot. Well, that's brilliant. I hope you listen to the rest of the shows we've done. And if you have kids that are using it or have kids who are around grown-ups that are using it, please listen to Libby Stout's programs about the brain. That'll open your eyes wide. This is not a good product. This is not something that's helpful. We've gone all through the medical alternatives that are available. This is not a
medicine.
No, it's just all of that is a big scam. But the driving is the thing. I mean, who hasn't come home from driving somewhere and said, what the heck is wrong with everyone? They drive like maniacs. Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. And so who knows? Maybe some of them are driving well, they've been smoking pot, probably lots of them. The more we legalize it, the more we promote it, the more we have on the road. He's going to give us all that. So let me give you his bio. Travis, let's take a really quick early break, and then when we come back, we won't interrupt him for quite a while. So Dr. Philip Drumm received his doctorate in pharmacy from the University of California, San Francisco. He's a licensed pharmacist, has been for 31 years. He has a wide range of experience from community pharmacy practice, a residency in hospital pharmacy, practice as a hospital-based oncology pharmacist, pharmacy administration work as a clinical coordinator and later a regional manager and leader in regional pharmacy training and patient safety programs. So he's not like just been the guy at, I mean, I love the guy at CVS. Somebody's got to be the guy or the lady at CVS, but, you know, that's not the scope and breadth of, it, of his breadth and scope of his experience. He's been active in pharmacy associations and has spoken statewide and nationally on various pharmaceutical topics. As a result of a family tragedy, he's been active in research on driving and marijuana and educating the public over the dangers of marijuana in society. And I'll let him tell that story. We have done a couple of previous shows with him, and I've got those linked on the site as well. I really hope if you are ambivalent about the issue of marijuana, you think it doesn't harm you. Well, you know, I don't care what other people do in their own house. Great, I don't care what they do in their own house either. But I don't want them driving a car. I don't want them ingesting chemicals and solvents and whatever all else they're ingesting, because now they're all going to be screwed up and sick. You know, you wonder all these diseases people get, and we're all worried about secondhand cigarette smoke. Oh, well, newsflash.
I get a contact high every time I come home from work at night from the neighbor next door.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I can hear my mom in the back of my head. Honey, I think you have a skunk. Yeah, she never believed me. That was a different smell. Oh, my God. Well, we will try to, well, I don't know. We're probably going to be haters. I was going to say we'll try to stop being haters, but it's probably going to keep going. But we're going to inject Dr. Drumm into the conversation. He's going to take over all the talking and inform you on what's going on with the driving part. So if you're in a state that's on the bubble and you're looking at, well, maybe this will help us, please keep listening. I think that you will be scared straight. And if you live in California and you think this has all been handled, something for you,
frankly,
too.
Frankly, I'm getting a little tired of all the extra money we're going to make to help enforce the law.
If we just legalized it, all the crime would go away.
Oh, yeah. We'll be able to handle it.
Said no one ever. All right. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find all this information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rockstar Sean, don't get your money.
Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
There you go.
Don't want to, you know, oversell and underdeliver. All right, Dr. Drum. Let him have it.
Hello, Aaron and Bill. And again, thank you for inviting me to your radio station here. If I could, just real fast, kind of cover just a few of the issues of what you had covered.
Yes.
I'd like to kind of step back and talk about a little bit of that fantasy and scam that was sold to us. With regards to, I would throw out, what happened to the seed-to-sell program?
Yeah.
Remember that program? That was the one that was supposed to monitor all the way from a seed until that marijuana was ultimately sold. That was how they were going to prove that the grow, that marijuana was grown legally. We know that the black market is selling over 80% of their product to the legal market, and the legal market is then turn around and selling that black market marijuana. So the hazards with those chemicals that you mentioned is a major problem, because those chemicals have been caught in the products that have been sold in the state in the legalized marijuana drug den here in California. They've caught them with illegal chemicals on their product, and the Cannabis Control Group have actually had to recall some of these products, and I sure hope the California public looked on their website to make sure that the product that they're consuming was not one of the recalled ones.
Well, yeah, back up just a second there. How do you recall a consumable?
Exactly. Well, as a pharmacist, I would have the lot and the name of the person that I sold to, and I'd be able to reach back to them and say, hey, the Food and Drug Administration has recalled this product, and I need you to bring it back. And I can replace it with an appropriate product because the Food and Drug Administration has deemed it to be inappropriate. I don't think the state's doing that with the marijuana industry. And so when they've been sold, you're absolutely right. There's no way of getting that product back. I'd also wonder whether the state actually went out and pulled those products from their stores to make sure that they're no longer being sold in those stores. But also another interesting point, you know, that they said that they were going to be testing these products to make sure that they didn't contain these illicit chemicals and didn't have banned chemicals in them. Well, that falsehood also was proven to be just that, a falsehood, in which they found the illegal chemicals on the products that had been lab approved by the state labs that the state authorized to perform these assessments. They found that they were falsifying their data.
Oh, nice.
And falsifying their report.
No.
And they shut them down for a couple months and let them come right back up. And so they've been found with these illegal chemicals on them. They've also been growing. Also, you said it was on private land. Not true, Aaron. These are also being grown on federal land as well.
Yeah, see, the big trick with, I mean, I'm not saying they're not growing on public land, but they know that
federal
with
land.
It still listed, it's not federal land. The federal government doesn't own land. It's private land. Or it's public land.
Public
it belongs
land.
To us.
Yeah, right.
So on the public lands, they know that they're subject to federal enforcement and intervention, which is what they've had for years and years and years. So moving to private property has been like, woohoo, the Wild West.
And one more thing about those animals. There was a talk that I attended up there in Shasta and Weed, I believe it was February 2019, in which Morad Gabriel from UC Davis, an environmentalist, talked about the hazards and dangers, and this has been reported out, it's on PubMed, that there are wildlife that are being killed. And I think we all remember the spotted owl and why we had to stop our lumber industry up there in Northern California was because of taking away the trees from the spotted owl. Well, there's more spotted owls being killed by the marijuana industry than there probably ever was by the marijuana industry. The spotted owls are being killed as a result of the food that they feed on, and they tend to feed on things like rats. The marijuana industry doesn't like rats eating their marijuana, so they apply anticoagulants that will make those rats bleed to death and die. And so guess who eats the rat? The spotted owl.
Yeah.
Also Martin and Fishers. And so Morad Gabriel talks about how they've done necropsies on these animals and found them loaded with anticoagulants and dead as a result of the marijuana industry. And so they are killing many animals. They are starving and cutting off the water supply so that they can put them on their marijuana plants. And that then kills off our salmon runs up there in Northern California as well. This has all been proven and shown, and yet we're not seeing any action to stop this.
No, can you imagine, like, now these, a lot of the water that you're pushing 10 million gallons a day, somewhere in that neighborhood was being pumped and delivered via water truck. So when you kind of do the math on that, that's just an astounding number. So we had 30-some-odd wells in that area of legitimate residents that went dry last year with this excessive pumping. They stopped the pumping with an ordinance. The county did, and the sheriff's office put in a major, major effort to crack down on that. And, you know, it's interesting. This year, even though the drought actually is much worse in that area, and that area looks like the film set for Lost in Space. I mean, there's no surface water there. It's high desert. It's juniper and it's high desert.
Just sagebrush.
So yeah. You don't have surface water. You only have subsurface. So you pump all this water, and it's interesting, without all that excessive pumping, nobody's well's gone dry this year that I've heard of, which is, curiouser and curiouser. But 10 million gallons of water, and then just south, like in Shasta County and some of the other ones, they're stealing all the out of the creeks. They're pumping it out of the creeks. So the guy down the creek who is legally allowed to utilize the water can't get it because it's been siphoned off at the top end.
Yes, and this has been going on for several years, and it's only gotten increasingly worse. So kind of going to the topic at hand to talk about the Impaired Driving Task Force, I was appointed as a content expert on the Prop 64, which was our marijuana legalization for all bill here in California in 2016. And later in 2017, the California Senate Bill 94 required, mandated then the review of impaired driving in the state of California, and convened then a group of content experts, including myself, to meet. And we've met then since then. Started in 2017. I attended my first meeting in 2018. We met in 2018, 19, and 20. And we finalized a report in July of sending in some paperwork with and emails in August of 2020. And the report came out in January of 2021. Just to give you an idea of other members that were on this committee, I saw that you did attach the document there on your webpage, so I'd encourage people to take a look at it, because there is the document of what our group created. Our group was created with members of law enforcement, the DA's office, traffic safety officials, cannabis companies, cannabis research, organizers representing cannabis and sellers, the Drug Policy Alliance, who's the group that is attempting to legalize LSD, ecstasy, magic mushrooms, all of those drugs that they want to call medicine as well. There were just a couple members of the medical community, me being one of them, with expertise in substance abuse and knowledge of pharmaceuticals, social justice groups, including the ACLU, NAACP, Recording Artists Against Drunk Driving. AAA was there. The Alcohol Beverage Control was there. The Cannabis Control, California Department of Justice, medical examiners, DMV, and county behavioral health and other universities were there. So you can see there was a wide swath of the individuals that were invited to be on this impaired driving task force. Just to correct things as well, that task force is complete. We did our task. We created recommendations. And I asked, where are those 30 recommendations? Thankfully, they're now on your website for people to be able to take a look at. They've been handed off, I believe, to the state legislature and governor's office in January of 2021. That's when our due date was, when we began meeting. We knew it was January 2021 was when it was due. I'll just kind of point out that's about 5 years after we legalized recreational marijuana and 25 years after we legalized medical marijuana in the state. Jeez. I would also point out that there's been no laws to address marijuana impaired driving in those 25 years since 1996. And so I would strongly encourage people to be starting to question why isn't our legislature and executive branch here in California doing something to protect the public? I believe they've taken an oath to protect our society. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that in 25 years.
What
and
do you,
we haven't seen it since this report's been submitted.
What do you see as the reluctance to act on any of this?
I would encourage you to contact those legislators and ask them why they're not doing this.
They're busy passing a thing that they can put up billboards advertising pot.
Yeah, in fact, I went and spoke in opposition to that bill. Assembly Member Quirk brought forward AB 1302, which is flying through all the committees right now. AB 1302 will change your, right now we currently have, and again, this is what the people voted for in Prop 64. We voted to not allow billboards. They told us they weren't going to allow billboards, but they slipped in a little line that said billboards across the state border. That was the loophole that they slid into the bill that we all voted for. So when I turned around and said, hey, how come there's billboards, marijuana billboards on our highways? They said, oh, didn't you notice? It said only on those highways that cross the state border that we can't have billboards on.
Well, they've got them on I-5. That goes right through Oregon.
Actually, they can't. So you can turn that into the California Cannabis Control Group, and they need to be taken off of I-5 because that's illegal right now. Because this has not been turned into law. They're rapidly trying to get it turned into law. I spoke in opposition to that bill, and that's when I took my and this was in front of the Senate Committee on Transportation, and I pointed out to them that I sat on this impaired driving committee and was wondering why they had no bills created this during this legislative session since they had this report since January of 2021. I would have thought that would have been a main task of the Senate Committee on Transportation to have written bills to protect the California public, yet unfortunately there's none, and they wholeheartedly approved to pass to have additional billboards, not just to start. They're already on 405, 105, 680, 880, 580, but they're not on 80. They're not on 5. They're not on 101. Again, as a result of a lawsuit that came down and which prohibited them from putting it on 101, the Cannabis Commission tried saying, well, we said it only had to be 15 miles from the border. And the judge agreed with the people that brought suit against the state of California that, no, that's not what the California public agreed to in Prop 64. They said it could not be on a highway that crosses the border.
I know of two that are in the Redding area that are right on I-5. Now they're on the they would be on the southbound side, so that I guess they're does that matter?
Turn them in, they have to take them down. They cannot be on. They cannot currently be on there. It is against the law at this point in time. Engage the Bureau of Cannabis Control. Take a picture of it and send it in. Also, send it into your California Highway Patrol, since they are the state police, and they should enact it to make sure that this gets taken down.
Oh, okay.
Because it cannot be on those highways at this point in time.
Well, good. That's good to know. I'll do that.
So
before we get into kind of, I'd like to go over the recommendations from our subcommittee committee. But before I get there, I'd like to kind of bring some background as to, you know, why is this so necessary? I've done research on impaired driving in the state. I was working with an individual called Al Crancer. He was a former National Highway Transportation Safety Authority researcher, and he knew how to utilize the FARS database. That stands for Fatality Analysis Reporting System. And in 2016 in the state of California, the FARS database showed that there were 240 deaths in California with a marijuana-positive driver out of the 5,020 deaths. However, of those 5,000 deaths, only 1,000 were drug tested.
Mm.
So that's a bigger problem that we have.
Oh, yeah.
We're only drug testing 20% of our cases. But they did find that 40% in California, it was 40% of the cases had drugs in them, okay, of those 1,000 that they tested. And at that time, it was 19% were marijuana in the state of California. Okay? Nationally, if you look at all the states in the United States, in 2018, there was a national report that showed poly drug driving accounted for 44% of the driving deaths, which was up from 28% 10 years before. So we have a major problem on our roadways of drugged drivers. And this is not alcohol. These are non-alcohol drugs that are in our in people that are killing people. And so nationally, actually, they even stated that it was 38%, whereas, again, California was 19% in 2016. It was listed as 38% nationally in this national report. But let's go back to those 240 deaths in California. 125 of them were the marijuana-positive driver. 115 were innocent people. Those were people like that were passengers in the car, pedestrians, other drivers that were hit by these marijuana-impaired drivers, bicyclists, etc. So 47% of the deaths that were in marijuana-positive cases in the state of California, 47% were not the marijuana driver. This compares to 40% of innocents being killed in alcohol cases. So more innocent people are being killed in marijuana cases than in alcohol cases. And the question then becomes why? Well, one needs to look at when are those marijuana fatality cases occurring? They tend to occur during peak driving hours as compared to alcohol. I think most people know that alcohol appears late at night, typically when the bar is closed. And so alcohol driving fatalities reach their peak around 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. when the bar is closed. However, when we were looking at when were these marijuana deaths occurring, they were occurring between 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. That's after work. That's peak rush hour traffic. We also saw another spike between 7 to 8 a.m. before work. And so what we surmise from this is that marijuana-impaired drivers, after they get off of work, are using in the car and driving home. And then they are crashing into people and killing innocent people on the roadway. This is as compared to, again, alcohol, which those people, not saying that they don't drive during the daytime, but there's a lower likelihood of being killed by an alcohol-impaired driver during the day as compared to a marijuana-impaired driver. We also looked at when you combine alcohol with marijuana, and that tends to be the most common two-drug combination is alcohol with marijuana, the peak then for that tends to be 2 hours later. So the peak time is 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., and we surmised that they were probably going to the bar for a couple hours and then getting out on the road and then being high on alcohol and marijuana at that time.
We have to take a really quick break here, but when we come back, before you leave that category, talk a little bit. Let's make sure whenever you do it, I don't care, but let's make sure we talk about the testing part of it too, a little bit.
The standards.
I know we've spoken about that on previous shows, but I don't think that's gotten any better. Although I'm actually not sure about that. I know you're conversant there. So we will continue this topic. Our guest is Dr. Philip Drumm. He is really an expert on this. He unfortunately had lost his sister thanks to a marijuana-impaired driver and made this kind of crusade, sort of a big word, but I would say absolutely a crusade. He's a smart guy, knows a lot about it, lives here in California, and has a doctorate in pharmacy, so he's absolutely an expert on drugs too. Handy. What a great combination. I'm just sorry he had all the personal experience to go with it. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find all the information about this show. It's July 25th, 2021, and the previous ones we've done at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I know why, because I got high, because I got high. Because I got high.
Go to the next. I was gonna go to work, but then I got high.
Ooh, I just got a new promotion, but I got high.
Now I'm selling dope, and I know why.
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
La da 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 da.
I was gonna go to court. Before I got high.
Ooh,
I was
child support.
I was sitting in a coffee shop just minding my own affairs, when all of a sudden this policeman caught me unawares. He said, "Is your name Pedro?" I said, "Yeah, I guess so." He said, "Then come with me, because you're the man we've been looking for." I said, "Hey, man, I've been framed. Hey, no, really, man, I was framed. I never do nothing wrong, man. But every time I get the blame, I've been framed."
The sad part is, I think most of us informed ourselves about marijuana from Cheech and Chong, and the people who didn't ever use pot, that's how they think it works.
Yeah.
It's all that sort of, I don't know, that it's no big deal. Anyway, back to the list, Dr. Drum.
Sure, thank you very much. Just a couple more points I wanted to make. You mentioned, other ways of testing.
Yeah.
For marijuana impaired driving, and I'll cover that in some of the recommendations that the task force had as a result of our scientific knowledge of what's out there. But I'd also like to point out something that actually happened to me just personally recently. My AAA auto insurance increased 50%.
Whoa.
My premium went up 50%, despite not having a claim in over 10 years. My 2018 car depreciated 1 year, and I'm having decreased travel time on the roadways, due to COVID and not having to drive into work and things like that. And we also saw, I guess the key question is why. And
yeah,
I
asked, exactly.
Of course, they said, "Oh, well, we've looked at your car and saw the type of car you own," and I remind them, "My car depreciated, meaning that you're going to pay back, if my car gets in a crash, less, because the Blue Book price went down. Yet I'm being asked to pay 50% higher this year." And I don't think they were being quite honest with me, because I think there was another report that came out recently about 2020. And in 2020, we saw an increase in auto fatalities due to drugs and alcohol, despite decreasing travel miles in the United States. And there's also other reports that showed that states that legalized recreational marijuana saw a 16% in average auto insurance premium after marijuana legalization. Colorado saw a 33% increase. Nevada saw a 40% increase. So I think I know why my auto insurance premiums went up. Rocky Mountain HIDA reports through the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Authority that's looked into this since they legalized in Colorado. They saw a 66% increase in the number of related traffic deaths in Colorado. Washington Traffic Commission saw 20% of their drivers were under the influence of marijuana compared to 10% before legalization. Mm. So I think I know why. In fact, I did actually give a talk in Nevada, I think around 2014-15, in which there was an insurance person from New York that was there, and they were asking them, "So what does legalizing marijuana and having autonomous vehicles going to do with insurance rates?" And he said, "Well, with marijuana, their insurance rates will definitely increase. And the autonomous vehicles, we don't know yet, whether they will truly stop, crashing." So I think it would behoove people to kind of take a look at your recent auto insurance when it comes in, and don't just blindly pay it. And I think we need to all start questioning, "Hey, how come my rates went up? I'm not a marijuana impaired driver. Maybe this needs to be held accountable to those that are." Probably our uninsured motorists, like the person that killed my sister was an uninsured motorist. Our uninsured motorist component will probably skyrocket, because these people are spending their money for their substance rather than for car insurance. So just something to take a look at, that it's happening. In fact, down near me, I just heard about a case of an NFL coach riding his bicycle was killed on Thursday. They haven't identified if there was problems with the driver. But there's plenty of pedestrians and bicyclists, getting killed. And in fact, that's what they stated in this 2020 report, that people are dying. The highest traffic fatalities seen an increase in 7.2% from 2019 numbers, despite a 13.2% decrease in travel miles. A 7% increase in fatalities despite a 13.2% travel miles. There were over 38,680 deaths in the United States from travel fatalities, the highest since 2007. The National Highway Transportation Safety Authority attributed this to impaired driving. I think we've also seen recently that they said the number of drug use has skyrocketed in 2020. Maybe because we've had more marijuana sales, alcohol, there were suicides. So impaired driving, speeding, the person that killed my sister was only under the influence of marijuana, and he was speeding. Marijuana-impaired drivers typically are speeding over 30% of the time in fatal cases. When you combine it with alcohol, close to 50% of the alcohol and marijuana-impaired drivers that cause fatalities, close to 50% are speeding. And failure to wear seatbelts. They had a 20% increase in occupant ejections in 2020 due to not wearing a seatbelt. Interestingly, there was a decrease in 9% in fatalities of people 65 and above who are probably not your marijuana-impaired or marijuana-using public. They did see an increase in pedestrian fatalities in Colorado, 26% increase, California, 5% increase, Washington, 7% increase, and Alaska, 33% increase, but that was just going from 3 pedestrians being killed to 4. But marijuana legalized states, again, 80% of them had an increase in their pedestrian fatality rate. 22% pedestrian fatality rate in the first half, an increase by 22% in the first half of 2020 by the time they were looking at that data. So killing pedestrians increased 2.2 deaths per billion vehicle miles traveled from 1.8 deaths. So again, very concerning. We're seeing pedestrians, bicyclists, and other people getting killed, which we saw with the marijuana-impaired driving data, that though they're more apt to kill those people. Why? They don't see well. They tend to have a tunnel vision. They only see the center portion of their visual field when they're under the influence of marijuana. So they don't see overhead, and they don't see off to the side. And so as a result of that impaired vision, they don't see the overhead lights, traffic lights, or the lights in the corner, and they tend to then hit cars that are traveling through an intersection because they didn't see the traffic lights, and they T-bone people. They're also hitting pedestrians and bicyclists because they don't see them to the side of the road because of their tunnel vision. They also have problems with glare. And so if headlights are coming from the opposite direction towards their eyes, it stuns somebody under the influence of marijuana, and they do not see well when there's glare. So when there's sunrise, sunset, and any time car traffic lights are coming towards them, it impairs their vision. And so they said, interestingly, that there was an increase in the people of color, had a higher percentage of increased fatalities. However, most of the pedestrians are killed in their local roads and their neighborhoods. They're being killed in the dark, again, probably as a result of the glare, and away from intersections. So if people are jaywalking or in the middle of the street, they're getting hit, again, because of that lack of peripheral vision. So some interesting information that's come out just recently this year. It usually takes a year before we start seeing last year's data. And so that data has come out recently, and it's quite concerning.
Well, the other thing, too, if you look at what they're doing with our roadways, I don't know about your area, but here, they've got all, you know, they're on this obsessive bicycle thing, just so irritating. So they've got all these, you know, they're necking down all the roadways and narrowing the lanes and making all these
bike
spaces
lanes
for these bike lanes. Well, that's fine if the bike lane's over on the side, but now they have these. Some of these intersections, honestly, you feel like you need to stop and just take a minute and look at all the lines and figure out what they are. Because you've got these green striped things, which means that I guess the bikes can be there, but the cars might be crossing through it because there's a right turn lane, but the bikes that are going straight can go in the green thing. And I'm thinking, uh-huh, that's going to help. I don't know.
Well, especially if you don't have any peripheral vision. I don't care what color you paint those lanes.
Well, that's
someone's going
to
get
But you're
tagged.
Actually directing the bicycles to go between the cars because the right-hand turn lane people would be over to the right of the bicycle, and the people going straight would be on the left, and they're all using that same space. It's like, so now with the information you just shared, that's an invitation to just get people run over.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do now is if we could go through some of the recommendations, some of the 30 recommendations that our impaired driving task force, again, it's over. We're done. We submitted our report. We worked for 3 years for free for the state. And
isn't that what we're all doing?
Pardon me?
Sorry. At some level or another, aren't we all just working for free for the state? We've got like four minutes.
So because they were working for state organizations, which I'm sure they were being paid for. I actually had to take paid time off from work. So use my vacation time to attend these meetings, which I happily did to try and protect you and your family.
Thank you for that.
It's already impaired my family. I just have a brother remaining in my family. And so really what I see myself doing, is honoring up my sister, but it's also really to help you and your family, because we need people to try and speak up on behalf of all of us as a result of what's happening out there. So if I could go through, the first section was on data recommendations. And so the first one talked about the state should track all driving under the influence and driving under the influence of drugs toxicology outcomes from labs, including the number of samples submitted, the number of samples tested, and all sample results. Can you believe the state does not already do that?
Yeah, that really surprises me because they're already collecting the information, aren't they? I mean, but they don't keep track of it?
No, they're not. And so this would then set up a system in which they have to keep track of it. Each, city, county, you got the sheriffs keeping it and the county. So we really need to have a state collection of this information. The state should. Oh, and let me just say one other key thing. I'm going to read. Unfortunately, I'm reading exactly what the verbiage is of someone from California Highway Patrol actually adjusted many of our recommendations that were shall. And I think we all know what shall means. Shall means must.
Yeah.
Something we were very specific when we were drafting our recommendations, and you could see our recommendations are on the California Impaired Driving Task Force site, and we have our subcommittees. I was on the best practices subcommittee. Our minutes are on there, and you could see our actual recommendations where we had many items say shall do this, shall do that, and they've been changed to should. We also had time frames as to when these things needed to be done by. And many of our time frames were removed. So I would strongly encourage that we return them to shall, and I would recommend that everything be done within 2 years' time frame for these all to be implemented. I think if you guys remember, we voted on legalizing marijuana in Prop 64 in November of 2016, and by January 1 of 2018, the marijuana industry was selling legally in the state of California.
Yeah.
That's 14 months? So I think we can get this done in 2 years, all of these recommendations. I think that's being very generous. These things should have been done in the last 25. The state should also track DUI and DUID arrest outcomes, looking at charges, diversion outcomes, plea agreements, trial outcomes, and final case disposition. We should be seeing what's happening in these cases, because I could tell you, from personal knowledge and talking with people in the DA's office, 90% of our court cases are plea deals. 90%. So very few cases, in fact, I know many of driving fatality cases from impaired driving, from marijuana driving in particular, that were plea deals.
Wow.
Let's
come back and pick right up on that. And we have the next hour with Dr. Philip Drum. You are listening to We the People, and you can find all this information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. Hey, do we have a sponsor?
What do you have for us, Bill?
Yeah, we do have a sponsor.
I heard it might be those Pape Machinery people.
Oh, yeah, man. They're everywhere. Yeah, Pape Machinery. They're your local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And you want to go up there, they've got lots of tractors in stock, implements, mowers. They got it all. It's all green. Go up and see them. They also have full parts and service available. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And do not forget the swinging deal on generators.
Oh, they got a swinging deal, yeah.
Well, there you go.
While they last, just a little FYI, Honda is having a problem supplying generators to California right now. So thank our local governance for that because they put some restriction on them that makes it a little difficult to sell in California now. So,
What a surprise.
Yeah, you got to go out of state to buy certain models of Honda generators.
Probably going to catch you at the border.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to keep your power on. How dare you?
They'll impound your generator.
They want you to be in the dark. You'll be in the dark.
Yeah.
Ugh, idiots. Uh-huh. But meanwhile, everybody can smoke pot and drive their car.
Yep. Go back to your cave.
That's, I guess, spoiler alert on the show. Meanwhile, okay, so Dr. Drum, not to utilize any more time because I know you have a ton of information. So, for the folks that missed the first hour, we definitely don't have to recap the whole thing. But you're talking about the impaired driving task force that should be set up now. I mean, shouldn't it be working now? Shouldn't all of this, all these recommendations, all of these things? Well, actually. Hold on, that's not even what I really. That's not even true. This should have all been done before they legalized marijuana.
Exactly. I mean, if you're going to legalize a drug, maybe we ought to keep track of the ramifications.
Yeah.
From the get-go. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think any other state that's falling into this trap needs to be fully aware that you're absolutely right. This needs to be done before you let a hallucinogenic substance out onto our roadway. The sole purpose of using marijuana is for its hallucinogenic effect, okay? It's to alter one's brain. That's the purpose of using marijuana.
And this isn't, we're not talking about the marijuana of the 70s.
2% THC.
Yeah, 2% THC. This stuff is potent.
Right, we're talking easily in the 20% for the joint, if you will. And then these vape pens. And shatter and wax and other things that they're selling now in our dispensaries today. The marijuana, you know, drug dens that are there. I actually don't like calling them dispensaries. I call them what they are. They're actually drug dens. That I wouldn't recommend anybody to go into, as we already talked about the illicit chemicals that are on these products. I think you should probably wear a hazmat suit if you're ever considering and a ventilator. If you're ever considering walking into those rooms, because again, these are loaded with pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, things that, and then people are consuming these. They're smoking this. Again, the state's been caught not testing, and when they did test, they found that the testing labs were fraudulent. So just buyer beware. It's your state, not the federal government, that is in charge of this. The federal government has said this is a controlled substance one, meaning there's no medical indication for it. Its risk is higher than its potential benefit, and that it has an addictive potential. And all of those things we know to be true.
Well, so if I go into a drug den and I purchase some of their products and it's later found out that they do contain a pesticide, and I ingested those
pesticides. Or rodenticide. Well, if you ingested the rodenticide, I guess you'd be dead. So
yeah. Do I have any recourse if I purchase something that could potentially damage me, or do I have to prove that it actually did before I can go after them for selling me poison, basically?
Yeah, I'm a pharmacist, not a lawyer. I think I'd refer you to a lawyer for that. But I strongly encourage people to start collecting the evidence of where you purchased that product, because as we know, the tobacco industry was hit by a few lawsuits as a result of them selling their product for many, many, many years. And those people that were able to prove what brand, what product they purchased, stood in a better stance there in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I would strongly encourage the parents to start collecting receipts and packaging. So that way when it comes back, oh, you can't prove you bought my, you know, Tommy's Best High marijuana product. You can say, yes, we did. Here's the receipt. And here are the packaging that my child then used your product. So I would start collecting that evidence is what my recommendation would be. Again, I think ask a lawyer as to how they would best recommend you
right.
handle that. So to get back to the groups, our task force recommendation, again, we had a recommendation the state should actually perform, shall analyze all collected DUI and DUID data for the purpose of developing better methods to screen for and prevent DUIs, and that they shall publish this on an annual statewide report to guide the future direction of DUI and DUID policy decisions in this state. That must be done. They've been getting away with this for 25 years with legal marijuana. We have to have statewide reports that are available to the public to start looking at this data and doing some analysis. I don't know that we can necessarily rely on the state to perform the adequate analysis that I would strongly encourage that this information needs to be put out there. They could easily blind the individual information. You don't have to put the person's name on there, but you can say where the crash occurred, what the blood levels were, what the, you know, the oral swabs, the time of day, you know, what substances were found, how many people were injured, how many people were killed. All that information should be out there, whether it was raining, was it sunlight, what time, you know, all that information could easily be put out there. It is with the FARS database. They have to report that into the federal government. We should have a database in this state as well, and it should be actually even better than the FARS database.
Right.
So that's kind of the data recommendations that our groups had. We also had a section called Cannabis Consumer Education Recommendations. It's not only for the consumer, but also for other people. So really I would call this section our education section, that the state should provide responsible sales and consumption practices training to all cannabis retailers, cannabis consumption lounges. And by the way, there are consumption lounges allowed in the state of California, meaning you could go there and use your marijuana in a room. In which a group from UC San Francisco did an analysis of the air in that room and found it to be extremely toxic. Extremely toxic.
Really?
To be inside of these rooms. Yeah, UCSF did a study in some drug dens over there in Berkeley and Oakland, and they reported this at the 2019 North American Cannabis Summit. You can go onto the website and find that, 2019 North American Cannabis Summit. You can find that presentation and review the data that came out of UCSF on how toxic the air. And I would think that the workers that work in those lounges might have a nice case against these groups.
God, you'd think so.
That they as workers are being exposed to this and might be able to bring up a workers' comp claim against the organization.
But we still have OSHA running around fining companies because they saw an employee not wearing a mask. I mean, it's ridiculous how they pick and choose
right.
which industries they're going to pick
and
on.
And what's considered dangerous.
Yeah, what's dangerous. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this was astronomical levels. And they were doing things with whether it be a joint smoking or their volcanoes. That they were using other means that they were vaping. And the vape, oh, just by the way, the vape toxins that are coming off are no safer, really, than using just than smoking a joint. So that was information that was out. So, again, the training needs to be done with these people that are selling these products. And, again, even the home delivery services, which, again, I might add, you know, the state told us that we could prohibit in our cities and our counties, but then they turned around and allowed delivery services without our consent into our cities and counties that voted against marijuana. Just an FYI, that happened after Prop 64, that your state government allowed that. But they said that we should make it similar to the alcohol beverage services and sales training, so that there needs to be some training of these people,
right.
which talks about, you know, identifying when people are impaired and not being able to sell to people when they are impaired, right? So your bartenders can get in a lot of trouble if they continue to serve alcohol to somebody that's impaired. There's a requirement of this, of marijuana people. So,
well, I think there's got to be some consequences. I mean, when you're selling a product and then the person goes out in the parking lot and gets high before they leave, I mean, criminy sakes, I had a guy come in the other day that brought back a part in a box. And when I looked in the box, it was like the air from inside of his car came out. And it was like, holy cow, I think I just got high.
And you do realize, I don't know if it's happened in this state yet, but other states have deemed that an officer can't use the smell of marijuana in their car as an indicator that they may be using marijuana in the car. Even though it's illegal to use the marijuana in the car is what we voted on in Prop 64 and said, you know, it needs to be in the trunk and passengers can't be using, because, again, you can, as you said, get a secondhand high. But yet they tried to create a bus delivery system where they would drive them from one drug den to another drug den and have a bus driver. And then they tried to say, well, we're going to put them in an oxygen chamber, I guess. drive down the street.
Welcome to your alternate universe.
Yeah, so I don't know how exactly that would
Dr. Drum, are they allowed to, I mean, if you roll down your window, if you get pulled over, you roll down your window and you smell like beer, aren't you, I mean, then they're giving you a sobriety test. I mean, they're allowed to smell alcohol, right?
I believe so. In fact, it was Tiger Woods, who's a notorious person that's had multiple events with marijuana in his impaired driving.
That explains a lot.
The sheriff Villanueva said that he had smelled, that the officer had smelled his breath and said that there was no alcohol emanating from his breath. I guess the question I'd have for that officer would be, what does a gummy of THC smell like?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And that if you're relying on smell to be your only option, because, again, I'm sure they didn't do a nine-step walk and turn. He had a broken ankle. So they didn't do all of the field sobriety tests, but Sheriff Villanueva was adamant that he was not impaired. And they didn't draw blood.
That's a good way to make sure you never find out.
So the state should provide guidelines for advertisers displaying cannabis-related products, which include a legal consumption age for the cannabis, and information related to the risk of impaired driving. And I would encourage this to be put on all of our billboards. And I would encourage it to be 50% of the billboard needs to be the hazards and warnings of that marijuana. If you're going to put it on the roadway, let's warn the consumption puts people at risk for impaired, because they have to put it on their product right now, which, of course, people don't read, where it says you're not to operate in heavy machinery or a car. That's required by the state to be on the product.
Well, for heaven's sakes, I mean, your grocery store bag tells you not to put the bag over your head, you know, which I would think would be fairly obvious. To put a warning on a drug, that doesn't seem like a heavy lift.
Yeah, so but I would also it is on the drug. I'm telling you now. Prop 64 says it has to be on the product.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be on the billboard. So this section talks about advertising. So that's why I'm saying it should be on the billboard.
But didn't they also say they couldn't do billboards?
No, I'm saying they can.
They can. Okay.
They can do billboards except for those that cross state borders right now, and they're trying to pass a bill urgently that will allow on all of our highways.
Wow.
So they're upset that they don't have it on all of our highways right now. So they're trying to get it on all of them. They're not satisfied with having it on 680, 880, 580, 405, 105. In fact, they even said it. How come I can have it on 405, but I can't have it on I-5? That's what they said at the Senate Transportation Committee.
And some people are playing this off like a freedom or First Amendment issue.
Right, and tobacco doesn't have the same. Tobacco, agreed to not have advertisements. Do you see tobacco ads on the billboards anymore?
Well, no, and that was my next question. It's like how I guess my money's on tobacco suing marijuana.
I would hope so. I would hope that they would sue the state, actually. They don't have to sue.
Right, but
marijuana, sue the state and say, why are you discriminating against
Discrimination, sure.
Because you are allowing the marijuana industry to do this, but you're not allowing us. I'm sure they're going to come back, the state attorney general, who lost that case again down in Santa Barbara to get the billboards off the highway. They're going to probably continue to try and protect the marijuana industry because they're going to say, you, the tobacco industry, signed that agreement that would not, that would force you to put that dangerous information on your billboard. I'm just saying, let's be equal to the tobacco industry and do the same.
Yeah,
and
no kidding.
The marijuana industry, just like the tobacco industry, to put the warnings up on those billboards, I can guarantee you that will make the billboards go away.
Yeah, it will. Because they don't want to put a warning up on there.
They don't want to have to put up the risk of suicide, the risk of the driving issues, the low birth weight children, all of those things that are documented scientific evidence.
Or just the numbers, how many people were killed by the guy next to you who just got done smoking pot. So,
right.
Really quick break here, and then we're going to come back and pick right up where we left off. Sorry. Free enterprise, but at least we're not advertising pot. Yay. We will be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Tell me why it's a land of confusion.
Apparently, we already know. We just need to get the other half of the billboard up there so we can explain it to the rest of the people.
Well, they probably couldn't read it if you did.
Honestly, though, like on the way in this morning, or I guess it was technically almost afternoon, it was just mind-blowing. And people going really fast, and they go really slow. It isn't just your usual did-you-fail driver's ed, you know, thing. A lot of the driving is really kind of inexplicable. And I don't know. Do you have any idea? Is there any way to even know, Dr. Drum, how many people out there are driving after they've been involved with marijuana?
Well, again, there have been some studies, like Washington looked at the studies where they asked people to voluntarily commit to an oral swab to test, and it went from 10% of the drivers to 20% after legalization. So there have been some studies that have looked at this. They also did another study in which the marijuana industry is saying, see, it's not a problem. In Virginia, where we happen to have a major naval base, and of course those people know that they can't be using marijuana. So, you do need to make sure that when you do a study, you do it fairly. But if I could just roll through a few more of our recommendations,
Sure,
I hit some major ones here that we discussed. Warnings regarding the dangers of impaired driving. The risk of underage marijuana use and possible risk associated with poly substance use. Again, as I mentioned before, alcohol and marijuana is the largest combination product out there, reported nationally. Even 50% of the fatalities are speeding. Cannabis consumption sites shall provide information regarding locally available alternate transportation to all consumers. That was something that I definitely pushed for in our group, which, of course, the marijuana industry did not want. And it was changed to a should. Really, this needs to be done. If you're going to allow them to use on a site, how are they going to get home? And I would cite the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's report from 2016, which I gave to other members of the committee. The entire committee had this, that reported findings of scientific literature that supported waiting 6 hours after smoking 18 milligrams of THC for those who use less than weekly, and waiting 8 hours to be able to drive, following consumption or oral ingestion of 18 milligrams of THC.
And what is that equivalent to?
So let me go through that. So let's say you have a 23% joint. That 23% joint, about a half a gram, is about 115 then milligrams of THC. 115. I just told you 18 milligrams.
Yeah.
So that means you and 5.4 of your best friends would need to consume that joint for you to get 18 milligrams. So 6.4 people need to consume that 23% joint. You can imagine how many people need to consume that 60, 90% vape pen. Okay? And 80 milligrams, say 80 milligrams in a cookie, you need to eat less than a quarter of that cookie to get 18 milligrams, right? A quarter of it would be 20. So if you only eat a quarter of the cookie, you've eaten 20 milligrams. That's too much. So how are these people going to get home following use at a consumption site? That's why I said Shell provide locally available alternate transportation to get home. We have Uber, Lyft. We have ways that they can get home. They should be taking the keys away, just like they do to somebody that's impaired driving, that the bartender is responsible if they get in the car and they're impaired. They need to call a cab. They need to get another way of getting home. Again, I reminded AAA to educate people about how they, on New Year's Eve, help people get home. You call their telephone number and they'll get somebody to drive you home if you're impaired. So, we need to have that. We need to have age-appropriate education for youth on the impacts of impaired driving. We need to have training opportunities for the legal system and judiciary system who seem to not understand the hazard with this. And so we need them to be fully aware of what's going on out in the roadways that's bringing people into the court system. That within 2 years of being appointed and annually thereafter, all criminal justice officers, judges, defense attorneys, and prosecutors should receive training which covers addiction, drug abuse, behavior modifications, factors contributing to impairment. And of course, the marijuana industry wanted bias in arrests and prosecution to be added as well. The state should be providing training to persons working in the medical and pharmacy fields regarding the dangers of impaired driving by alcohol, cannabis, prescription drugs, and over-the-counter drugs. I think really most pharmacists already know this. They may not know as much about cannabis as I do, but I know our medical community is not that aware of the major hazards, especially with the drug-drug interaction issues that go on between legitimate drugs and cannabis. They're numerous and very hazardous. The DMV, we gave the DMV a responsibility, shall require traffic schools to add information about the dangers of cannabis or marijuana and drug impairment to their curriculum and include a victims impact panel component with their courses. I know I personally could never be a victims impact person to go in, because I happen to know the recidivism rate with this is astronomical for those people that are already impaired driving. In fact, the guy that murdered my sister had multiple DUIs before he killed her. He had two felonies regarding marijuana before he killed her. And even after he spent a little over 2 years of his 4.5-year sentence and got out of jail, he went on to commit another DUI after getting out of jail for killing my sister. So that just kind of shows you how concerned they are and how they tend then to not be a recidivist. They do a lot. Law enforcement recommendations, we had information. This is the other thing I think is going to be very startling to you. Do you realize that someone can go through peace officer's standard and training and not be required to understand or know how to perform standard field sobriety tests?
No.
That's bizarre.
I didn't know that either. There's 16 hours that needs to be done to be able to train them appropriately. And these people are getting out of their law enforcement academies in California without that. California Highway Patrol did reiterate multiple times that we require it, but others do not. Others do not. That should be a required skill, especially sure. For anybody that's out on the roadway, that they should know how to be able to perform standard field sobriety tests. All enforcement officer personnel assigned to traffic enforcement responsibility shall receive A-RIDE training. That's Advanced Roadside Impaired Drug Enforcement. Training within 1 year of being assigned and biannually continuing education related to impaired driving. So this is an additional course. It's a couple-day course that then delves more into, whereas the standard field sobriety test is primarily talking about alcohol and showing them how to do the 9-step walk and turn, the finger to nose, what modified Romberg, those types of things, looking, look at the tip of my finger, those types of things. The A-Ride training teaches them more about the drugs and which drugs cause which impairment. And so we're saying anybody that is assigned to traffic enforcement responsibilities, they have that training too. They need to have that training too. Okay? The CHP and California Office of Transportation Safety should make all efforts to increase the number of drug recognition evaluators, or DREs. Now, DREs are even more specially trained officers that have to go further, 2 full weeks further of education to be more educated on being able to identify impaired drivers. And so these are the people that they may call in. Unfortunately, it takes them sometimes a long time to show up to the site, even while some people are starting to now become less impaired. So that's why we need more of these on the road. That we don't have enough DREs on our roadway. And so the recommendation was that they should increase by 4% per year for the next 5 years. So 4% per year for 5 years is a 20% increase, about. Would it not be?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, this report was actually in the final version said 4% over 5 years. There's a little bit of a difference there, isn't there?
Yeah.
So that's why I say we need to enact what the content experts were recommending. In fact, we discussed this with the California Highway Patrol on how difficult this would be, and they actually talked about, the next one talked about, should receive incentive pay to be DRE trained, because these people get the DRE training, and then they told us they tended to move on into other forms of law enforcement and no longer used that specialized training that they received, so that if we gave them incentive pay, then they would tend to stick around in traffic enforcement. So I would strongly encourage that. Well, law enforcement should use best available roadside presumptive screening devices and confirmation tests in the most expedient manner for possible drug and alcohol impaired driving investigations. And so we weren't specific here. However, I think the information that's available in many, many, many other states, that oral swab, oral fluid testing for drugs is available. In fact, they've done it twice here in the state of California. They've already done it twice, where they've looked at oral swab testing for drugs, and this looks for opiates, THC, methamphetamine, multiple different drug substances, cocaine, that they can quickly identify within 5 to 7 minutes whether somebody's been impaired, has been exposed to that substance. And in which there was a study in 2013 that looked at over 4,500 drivers looking at oral swabs and blood data. And they found that the oral swab tests were accurate for marijuana over 98%, 98.6% of the cases, and that it was oral swab was highly valid for detecting the presence of THC in blood, but not accurate measure of blood levels. So, again, it's a measure to see its presence in the body. And, again, we use the totality of evidence to convict someone, not a blood level, especially not for a drug. In fact, the Department of Transportation does not use blood presence. So DOT Rule 49 CFR Code of Federal Regulations Part 40 uses urine testing for all drugs other than alcohol. So these are being done, they're performed in safety-sensitive groups. Well, who are those? Well, people like school bus drivers and interstate truckers are under this, but not your standard driver. That's a problem, because a standard driver could take out a school bus. In fact, I have video evidence from the NTSB that one did and killed 13 people in Texas. Okay? And so why I would encourage you, Aaron, to get, Congressman LaMalfa, who sits on the Transportation Committee, to please put forward a bill to enact the DOT Rule 49 CFR Part 40 for all drivers in the United States of America, that we can then use urine testing for PCP, opiate, marijuana, cocaine, amphetamine. We should be doing that.
And DOT rule what? You said that kind of quick.
So it's Rule 49.
Yes.
Code of Federal Regulations, Part 40. That is the Department of Transportation rule that stipulates how to test somebody for impairment. So if they're a pilot, an airplane mechanic, a boat captain, they are under that rule. A school bus driver and an interstate trucker, but not your SUV driver, not your sports car driver driving down the street. Okay? Right. Why not? Well, and so I would encourage that we do that. Again, oral swabs are used in many other countries and have been so for decades. It was 2019 that Scotland just adopted it, but in 2015, England and Wales had already adopted oral swabs as a measure for having zero tolerance. So if it was positive in the oral swab, they would ban somebody up to driving for a year. They could or have £5,000 fine. It could be up to 14-year prison sentence for a death as the result of driving under the influence. So many other countries take this very seriously. Unfortunately, ours is not. Again, our state is not even using oral swabs. There was an oral swab study that was done in Michigan that they first started it in 5 counties. They resulted in 92 tests that were done over 1 year period. They did 92 times with the DRE. It resulted in 89 arrests. 73 of the 92 were positive for THC.
Wow.
So testing positive, how does that translate to actually being impaired?
So for them to be able to have pulled somebody over, again, it's that totality of the evidence. They have to see somebody driving impaired.
Okay.
They're not just pulling people over and say, let me swab you. Right?
Yeah. So, they were swerving. So they were going reckless.
There's a presumption here that they're exhibiting actions of potentially being impaired.
Okay.
And so with their actions, with their failed standard field sobriety test, and oh, by the way, standard field sobriety tests were found to be very active in predicting, again, the 2016 study, 302 toxicologically confirmed marijuana positive people. DRE officers were able to predict marijuana 96.7% of the time correctly. 96.7% of the time in 302. There was a 2016 Orange County study in Southern California. 5,000 drivers suspected of DUI. So again, this is what you're alluding to, Bill. These are guys driving down the road. So from 2010 to 2016, over 5,000 drivers. Their final conclusion was the standard field sobriety tests were sensitive to marijuana positivity. There was no correlation between the standard field sobriety test to the blood of THC. So again, we should not be using blood. Blood loses 90%. You lose 90% of THC in blood after consumption, 90% in the blood within 80 minutes. On average, I did a study, it takes 2 hours to draw blood when there is a death or an assault. So when there's mayhem on the road, it takes a while to draw blood. If you're drawing blood 2 hours later, you've lost well more than 90% of the THC. Because, again, we know THC is fat-soluble. THC is residing in your brain, which is the largest fat-soluble organ in your body. It's not staying in the blood system because blood is water. So it is quickly leaving the bloodstream and going into the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why blood is not effective. Oral swabs would be to show presence in the body. Again, there was a Del Bozzo study that also looked at urine, and in 2018, they showed that if they found the metabolites in the urine, which again is in the Department of Transportation rule, they used the same values as the U.S. Department of Transportation in Italy, and they looked and saw a tenfold increase in crashes when people had the marijuana positivity to the level that's seen in the Department of Transportation. So yes, urine levels are effective in identifying a risk of a marijuana-impaired driver.
Nice. When we come back, I'd like to know if you have any information on the cost, because when they initially talked about blood tests and stuff like that, it was like, oh, this is just cost prohibitive. But it sounds to me like the whole swab thing and all that might be easy and less expensive and quick to implement. So be curious about that. Our guest is Dr. Yep. Philip Drum, and we are talking about, make sure I get it correct, the Impaired Driving Task Force. The recommendations and all of that are posted online for you. Please take them and use them. You can always use anything on our website, pictures, articles we post, things from our guests. Please make use of all of that information. You can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm already spinning the road,
it's all going to pot. It's all going to pot. Whether we're I can tell the world's gone to hell and they're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
The pills, no smoking the pills that make me feel okay. You go down easy, baby. I could drink you by the case. You're my painkiller. A little dose of you goes a long, long way. You're my painkiller. Oh, you take it away.
There you go, Bill. That's for you.
Oh,
you're
thanks.
My painkiller.
Oh, thank
That's
you.
That's why I'm not smoking on the weed. Or...
Smoking on the weed.
I got Bill.
There you are.
He's my painkiller. Oh, man. So we needed to mention, Dr. Drum, that Assembly Bill 1302, Louise sent me a little note here, is going to be voted on August 16th here in California. That would be the Commercial Cannabis Billboards Placement Restrictions Bill. Please call your California senator to vote no when it goes to the floor. And the vote is slated for, again, possibly August 16th. So if you live in California, call your state senator and let them know that Bill 1302, the billboards, the cannabis billboards, would be a no vote in your opinion.
And I just wanted to add about that. That is additional pot billboards. It's not – so there are already pot billboards that are already in Prop 64.
Mm-hmm.
It's just those that cross the state border cannot have them on them. So they – again, the bottom line is AB 1302 is going to let them have them on all highways except for 15 miles from the border. So they want to – they desperately want them on I-5. I-80, those that go across the United States. So that's what 1302 is only going to keep them off of I-5 and I-80, just to be clear.
Okay.
You asked the question about cost of this program, and I'd love to bring up the cost of a driving fatality. It was estimated to be about $1.3 million at about 3 driving deaths in the state of California. That's about 1,000 driving deaths due to marijuana in our state alone. Multiply that times probably about a $1.6 million per life lost now. So that kind of adds up as to how much this costs our society when you kill somebody due to a marijuana impaired driver. But just from a financial standpoint, let me go back to the state of Michigan issue. Again, Michigan had a bill in 2016 introduced. They then ran their study from November 2017 to November 2018. They did it in 5 counties. They did 92 tests. They looked back at the data, brought it back, and they overwhelmingly supported in February 2019 to expand this to all 46 counties at a cost of $626,000.
Wow.
For $500,000, do you think it would be a good idea? It's going to cost a little bit more because we have more people and more officers in this state, but it's just $500,000 to increase it to all of their state DREs. So not too expensive. It also is not too expensive if we would have enacted AB 551, which was going to require coroners and medical examiners to perform drug tests on driving fatalities. This was vetoed by Governor Gavin Newsom in 2019. The marijuana industry had them take out THC. The bill said shall include but not limited to the following drugs, and it had THC, it had methamphetamine, it had opiates, it had other drugs that were going to be tested for. Marijuana strongly objected to that, and they had them take out THC. Well, they subsequently used the fact that THC was taken out, but again, the line said shall include but not limited to. So THC was actually still in the bill, but Governor Gavin Newsom used the fact that marijuana wasn't in the bill in his veto vote, saying, oh, well, marijuana's not in the bill anymore, and it needs to be in there. But we're going to leave it to the discretion of our coroners to be testing for this. That's a $300 test. That's about $3,000 to do an autopsy. So who gets paid the $3,000 from the state? The coroner does. Are they willing to do the $300 drug test? No. I told you they were only doing it 20% of the time, 1,000 out of 5,000 deaths. That's why we need to mandate it. We need to make it shall do this, not should, shall. And that is one of our recommendations under the California Highway Patrol recommendations, is that we need to introduce back that law, a law that will force the coroners to look for drugs because they're not doing it. We also recommended that video or audio recording devices be used. So at the roadside, so Bill, if you're concerned, you know, pulling people, we'll have it on video, or preferably, I said, audio or video. Most officers have cameras. So let's videotape the person when they're performing their field sobriety test so we can show the jury them failing their field sobriety test. So that way there's no question as to the officer's veracity in saying that the person's failing their field sobriety test. The judge and jury can see it for themselves.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
So that's one of our recommendations. We also asked to consider having law enforcement perform phlebotomy at the roadside. This is not unheard of. Arizona does it now. So why not have police officers performing the phlebotomy? We don't have to bring them into the hospital. It taking hours before they get it done. They could do it at the roadside. Or what Texas did was brought somebody to the site. They actually had a legal person as well as a phlebotomist come out to the site, and they cut their driving fatality rates in half 2 years in a row.
Oh, no kidding.
People stopped driving impaired because they knew they were going to get caught because the phlebotomies now were being done at the roadside. That's a great way to catch them.
And when you say phlebotomy, how much blood are we talking about here? I mean, is it just a finger prick, or is it, you know, like
no,
a needle?
It would be just like what they do to draw blood for, you know, a sodium level or cholesterol level at the roadside, that they would draw some blood, a tablespoon to a couple tablespoons of blood.
You just guaranteed Bill's never, ever, ever even going to drive in a car with anyone who might have said the word marijuana.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring up a couple other. There's another testing mechanism that's out there. It's got a little bit of a problem. It's the breath test. As you know, they do a breath test for alcohol. It's easy for a two-carbon molecule for them to do this and equate the amount that's in the blood with what's in the brain. But we have a 21-carbon fat-soluble molecule in THC. And so, like I said, it doesn't stick around in the blood very well. It does come out in the urine. It does come out in the saliva. And it does come out in the breath. But unfortunately, I know one of the researchers here trying to do a breath test for marijuana and saying, well, I got enough to catch it 2 hours after use. And I said, that's not long enough. I told you earlier, 6 hours for smoked, 8 hours for an edible. And that's if you're an infrequent user. If you're a chronic user, you're actually chronically impaired because it's staying in your brain and causing impairment. And people's own actions, they've proven this, that they may ask them, do you feel impaired? They're not able to accurately predict their own impairment. Let me add one more thing. Per se limits, this was one of the toxicology recommendations, and some members, again, they were researchers, and they liked the idea, and even the legal system loves the idea of having a number, which, oh, by the way, is 0.08 for alcohol, and the recommendation by the NTSB since 2013 is to lower it to 0.05. Utah's already taken them up on it, but nobody else has. I'd strongly encourage for this state to also go down to 0.05, because one of the marijuana studies showed that they were drawing blood at the time that the person was driving, and they were committing weaving in a simulated driver, and that THC blood level was 13.1. Again, about an hour, two hours later, that level becomes 2. So again, that level of 2 or 3 really should be what we're looking at, because at 13.1, by the time you draw blood 2 hours later, it's about 2 or 3. Okay? And so they looked at it, so 13.1 of THC was equivalent to the 0.08 weaving. But then they did a combination of alcohol and marijuana, and they saw that 0.05 of alcohol plus 5 nanograms of THC at the time of driving, which would probably become undetectable an hour to 2 hours later. That five would be virtually nothing and would be unable to be detected with five. So, again, it's the combination that's really dangerous, very common. And one last statement I'd like to make to have everybody really think about this. California Governor Gavin Newsom and the California legislature is playing Russian roulette every day with your life by not addressing the issue of marijuana-impaired driving. Every marijuana user is like adding another bullet to the gun. 9 years ago, it was my sister that got killed driving to work. Will you or your loved one be next? Only making a severe consequence for such reckless behavior will things change. The task force is done. We created our 30 recommendations. It's time for the legislature and executive branch in this state to act. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, sure.
You know, anybody who thinks this is all victimless and it's just about people who have medical issues and all that other crazy stuff, it's like you've completely missed the point.
Right.
The organized crime, the roadway fatalities, the lack of, I mean, you know, I don't think there's any confusion about why we have all these people who are not in the workforce, you know, when we showed how many people increased their drug use, drug abuse, and overdosing last year. So you have, oh, we've made marijuana completely, you know, acceptable, sure, available. And now suddenly they don't want to go to work. Gee whiz,
well,
who could have seen that coming?
And they can't pass a drug test.
And there's that.
I mean, there's so
Amazon
many people.
Amazon said they're not going to test their workers.
Really?
Look it up.
They've just given up?
Look it up.
They just basically throw in the towel on that one. So we do have like another minute and a half or something like that. But so we don't run up against it. I just want to thank you for this. You are a wealth of information on this, and I would really hope that people would go to the website, listen to your previous shows, because they've all been different and really, really interesting. We really appreciate you sticking on this topic as tightly as you have and bringing all this. Because, you know, it's one thing for the rest of us to say we think it's a problem, but you can actually prove it. In the last minute or so, can you give a quick snippet on the whole medical thing? Just, you know, people saying, oh, well, we have to have it for medical purposes, just from the pharmacy standpoint?
Sure. Again, I guess the key question is, do you realize the Food and Drug Administration has already approved the psychoactive component in 1985? It's called dronabinol, also known as Marinol, and it very, very rarely gets used. So the lie was that we needed it for medical purposes in 1996. We already had it. We also now have CBD for medical purposes. So Mitch McConnell approving the hemp bill, which was used to create CBD, which is being sold in gas stations and everywhere, Bed Bath & Beyond, and et cetera, that we have CBD, medically approved CBD. For very rare seizure syndromes for CBD, for chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, and it doesn't work very well for that, and AIDS wasting syndrome for THC. So the indications are minuscule for the appropriate indications. The pain that it's being used for has repeatedly, whether it be cancer pain or non-cancer pain, it does not work.